Welcome everyone to the special episode of the Electric Podcast this week. It's not our usual time on Friday, but it is Friday for a lot of people, I guess, with the long weekend coming up. So Seth is here, by the way. How are you, Seth?
I'm good.
We couldn't line up our schedule perfectly for our usual time to do the podcast on Friday. So we decided to do it today because most of the news of the week is already out anyway. A lot of reporters are going to take some time off for the next few days, so you can expect the news cycle to be a lot slower. Though guys, still check out Electrek because I cannot stop myself from posting news, so I'm probably going to post a few things over the next few days anyway. And maybe our the guys are going to be itchy fingers too, and they're going to decide to eat that keyboard. So stay on the lookout, but. For the last 5 days, I guess, since we had the podcast, here's what we have to report on. And there's still some pretty interesting news, starting, of course, by the official delivery numbers for the second quarter. Tesla confirmed them yesterday. And it was surprisingly, we knew it was going to be good, but it was better than good, right?
I think so. I think everybody was expecting kind of like right on the border. There was even some rumors right before the numbers came out that Elon was keeping them just under the record so that he wouldn't have to pay out all the bonuses he promised, which I thought was hilarious.
No, but be careful with that. So that's just for the North American market.
Oh, right.
So what we were reporting was just for the American market, and the bonuses was just for the American market. To this day, like 3 days after the quarter has ended, I'm not being able to confirm that they hit their numbers for the we knew on Sunday that it was very close, but I'm not sure if they hit it yet. They haven't confirmed the bonuses yet, so I expect I'll be able to confirm that in the next few days if they hit the 33,000 numbers, if they get their bonuses. But we don't know that. What we got yesterday was the global delivery numbers, which were at 95,000 units, were about 4,000 higher than the previous record. And we thought they were going to hit the record, but just barely. 4,000 units, it's a lot more. And that is because, at least we think, of a few markets that we didn't know exactly what were going to be the record. We had a pretty good handle of North American market. We knew for sure in Norway because they released their registration number almost on live, which is great.
Yeah, Norway,
Norwegian for being open with the data.
Norway and Norway and the Netherlands, a few other European markets announced their numbers at the end of the month. So,
well, Norway, it's not just at the end of the month. It's like
it's every day,
every hour, like nonstop. It's really great. Speaking of like what we're on the subject, let's look quickly at those European markets that we have separately, because those are the ones that I already confirmed. Norway came in at 5,500 units, very good for the quarter. It's down from last quarter, but we expected that with deliveries normalizing after the start of Model 3 deliveries, which was at the end of last quarter, so now it makes more sense. Netherlands came in at 3,500, very good too. That's actually up from last quarter. Sorry. Germany is down at 2,600, but it's still a pretty good number for Germany because Tesla historically had a lot of difficulty penetrating that market, which is, of course, favors domestic brands like BMW and Mercedes and Audi. Switzerland, almost 1,400, pretty good too. Sweden, 1,700. So Sweden is way up. Tesla had a lot of difficulties having in the Swedish market too. The Model 3 is helping a lot there. France, we don't have the month of June yet, but I think France might have been a surprise here. I've been hearing things from my colleagues in France. We're saying that, and France also has been not a great market for Tesla. When it comes to EVs, the Zoe, of course, is leading there, and they have the Nissan Leaf, also is popular. They don't like bigger cars, too, so Model S and X was never popular. But now, with the Model 3 here, a little bit smarter. Still actually a big car, well, somewhat of a big car for France. And I think it's starting to catch up. And I've been hearing things from my colleagues about some of the stores in France that have seen some incredible traffic that they're not used to, and deliveries have catch up. So I think in June we might have seen we might see a surprising number. We don't have the data yet, but that might be a reason why Tesla got that 95,000 record orders. Other than that, you're under 1,000 for all those smaller market like Belgium, Australia, Spain. But Spain is way up too. Italy is way up. Italy almost doubled the sales that quarter to over 800 units. So that's pretty good. Denmark, which of course used to be a massive market for Tesla, but when they scrapped all their EV incentive, it went way down. Now it's starting to slowly go back up, closer to 1,000 units, 800 units now. And the other big unknown is the UK. We don't have the numbers for June yet, but that's when Model 3 delivery started in the UK. So we expect a big boost in June. But yeah, very interesting stuff in terms of deliveries and production. Too, Tesla reported some great production number as in the last quarter. If we look at what it looks in terms of growth. I mean, of course, quarter-to-quarter growth is very impressive because Tesla had a bad quarter first quarter of 2018. And it's a 51% quarter-over-quarter growth in terms of deliveries. But then if you compare the most... Quarter-to-quarter is always difficult to compare because the auto market is a very cyclical business. So over a year is a better way to compare. So the same period last year, so Q2 2018, it's up 217%.
Yeah, but
so that's when it bought it.
Of course, it was only selling in the U.S. and it wasn't even being produced at scale quite yet, but still good.
It was still in pre-op. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
I think they hit... What did they hit? They hit like their number, like they started producing in mass in the middle of this quarter last year, right? Something like that.
Yeah, I mean Q2. Yeah, Q2 was starting to get pretty good for Tesla, but they probably hit their stride.
Q3,
yeah.
Right.
And then from Q4 and on, it's been very similar in terms of production, but still pretty good. 87,000 units produced in Q2. Again, Model 3 represent the bulk of that at 72,000 units. Tesla produced 14,000 Model S and X, which is not high.
Are we concerned about that?
They produced 14,000, but they delivered 17,600. So there was an inventory there, and they were able to sell some of that inventory. I don't think we're going to see Model S and X come back to the numbers we're used to in the 20,000-25,000 range until the full refresh is coming up. Well, full refresh, not necessarily an exterior refresh, but the interior refresh and a new battery pack that we expect also to come out by the end of the year. Maybe the interior refresh is going to come before that, and that could help on its own, or maybe they're going to combine both of them and then have a big impact. I know that you are somewhat skeptical about that, about the impact of a refresh on Model S and X. You think the Model 3 is going to be a... It's going to be cannibalizing sales.
Yeah, I mean, for the Model X, I think that can kind of stand on its own. But as far as the Model S is concerned, I feel like a lot of the people who've been buying Model S historically for the last 5 or 6 years are people that may have bought a Model 3 if that had been available. I happen to fall into that category. And also some anecdotally, a lot of my friends and family are also in that category. They don't need such a huge car necessarily. The extra seating isn't necessarily valuable. So I don't think Model S will ever return to its what it was doing last year. Model X, on the other hand, that's a different car and a different category. And I think until the Model Y comes out, the Model X has still got a shot to kind of boost its delivery numbers, especially with a refresh. You know, like it shouldn't be, the Model 3 shouldn't be the fastest charging Tesla out there. When the Model X gets that, gets a whole bunch of other extras, gets the interior refresh, I think that's going to spur demand.
I think that's fair, but at the same time, I think that people underestimate the number of people that buy Model S and X with the higher performance version of those cars. They are the flagship, very flagship version of Tesla's entire lineup. And if the battery pack comes and not only... Because the problem where I see your point of view is that some of the upgrades that we're expecting in Model S and X are only going to be making it equal to Model 3, example, the charging speed. So still with the latest upgrade, Model S and X charging speed is still 200 kilowatts versus 250 for the Model 3. So yeah, if they bring up a battery upgrade and it's just now equals to Model 3 at 250, it's actually good, but it's not...
I think the Model S and X, because they have bigger battery packs, will be able to charge on a faster kilowatt basis, maybe not on a faster miles per hour of charge basis.
Yeah, oh, no, that's for sure. The efficiency is not going to be there. But yeah, they could probably or at least maintain that 250 kilowatt for a longer period of time. So we'll see. But what I think is going to happen too is that Tesla is going to be able to push performance higher, maybe a 0 to 60 a little bit faster, maybe a higher top speed is not necessarily needed, but maybe maintained at the higher top speed for a longer period of time, which would be a big deal for people that use the Autobahn in Europe frequently, or people that like to bring their car to the tracks, though I don't think that's a big market for Tesla. But you're going to need that. And at the same time, I think the market's going to shift a little bit with the Porsche Taycan coming in. Right. It's gonna create some competition, but it's also gonna bring more people to electric car and more people that are interested in that segment, that high performing segment. I think it's gonna be a good. People always say, "Oh, competition's gonna kill Tesla." Competition's gonna help Tesla. Porsche gonna be able to sell all their Taycan, but it's gonna also bring a lot more people considering electric cars, and then they're gonna look at the Model S or the Taycan and the high performance Model S. And if Tesla comes out with just a new model and the high performance version, I think that some people would go for it. Some people that were brought to the segment by the Taycan, being launched, and now they can consider the Model S too. I think that's an interesting way to get into it. I'm not worried about the Model S and X segment. That was your original question. I'm not really worried about it. And there's always some markets that are going to... We just talked about Norway real quick, but with the June's number, the electric cars market share jumped to 50%, led by Model 3. There were a lot of Model 3 deliveries in June, almost 3,000 units in June alone. That helped give Tesla a market share of 24.5% of the market in Norway. So... it is the most popular brand in the country, and that was for June, but the whole year they are at 16%, which is still number one, followed by Volkswagen, which always been the number one player in Norway. It's not anymore. Tesla lead market share 16% to 13%. It's pretty impressive.
And absolutely.
It really shows the rest of the world that you can go all electric. I mean, they're not there yet. It's 50% of new car sales, but they are clearly going there, and it shows the impact of just one good model, like one compelling model. The Model 3 is just skyrocketed Tesla to the top of the charts, make them the most popular brand in the country. Probably going to stay there throughout the entire year. I'm pretty confident about that. People say that Dumbman is not sustainable. I don't think that, because it's... here's the amount of time of thing. I mean, you get one customer, they get the car in the neighborhood, the neighbors start looking at it. Oh, Joe got his new the new Model 3. Let's check it out. And then we gotta have one too. Everyone who tries the car for more than a few minutes fall in love with it. Almost everyone. So I think it's gonna keep at least be sustainable in Norway, maybe grow. But my point was, that's just one model. By the end of the year, you got three or four more cars, electric cars, are going to hit the Norwegian market. Next year, a few more. And in those models, I think there's a few of them that can have maybe not a similar impact as Model 3, but a very close impact. I'm talking cars like the ID3.
Yeah.
ID3 from Volkswagen, I think it hit the sweet spot for a lot of specs and price point. Especially in Norway, where the competitor, which would be the Volkswagen Golf, which was a top-selling car for a long time in Norway, it's very close in terms of capability, in terms of segment. It's a very similar format. It's all electric. Much better price point than the Golf, than the diesel-powered Golf or the gasoline-powered Golf, because of the way that taxes in Norway are set up. So, yeah. Next year is going to be pretty crazy. The numbers, I'm pretty sure we're going to see over 70, maybe over 75% of new car being electric in country. That would be awesome.
Yeah, Norway's clearly the future. I think it's a kind of a microcosm of what we expect to happen all over the world, although different paces for different countries. Also, there's some like nice, you know, you mentioned the Golf, but or the ID3, but you know, they're not fantastic with the numbers, but like Honda's E and the Renault, the upgraded Renault, what you call it,
Zoe,
they've got some pretty good, you know, much better specs and, you know, some nice upgrades. So like, it's just going to be an avalanche there.
Yeah. I mean, the Honda E, I think that the range is a little bit lower than people would have hoped for, but we don't have the price yet.
Yeah,
it's a special looking car that people might get into. I don't hate it. I like it. I like a Mini Cooper type of deal, but a different style. If the price point is there, yeah, you're right. It could have a great impact too. All right, now all the good stuff. Let's dwell on the not so good stuff for Tesla this week. In the last week, Tesla lost 3 vice presidents, and it has a lot. Like, it has, I think, over 20 vice presidents, or not, but 3 in a week, it's still a lot. So I know, like, people, Tesla fans, always when we talk about executive departures, they weren't that important. Okay, right, yeah, you can say that, but 3 in a week, now it's starting to be big. We reported last week about Peter Oshholdinger. Leaving Tesla, so that one is not new. But this week we learned that he was going to Lucid Motors, so a competitor.
It's kind of a surprise.
Yeah, a lot of people described it as like a backward move for him, like he's at Tesla and he's doing. Yeah, but you know what? I think that was good news actually, because what the guy is clearly he had the most experience at Tesla in terms of vehicle manufacturing by far. So it's definitely still a loss for Tesla. But he's bringing his talent to Lucid Motors, who's in the midst of trying to set up their own electric vehicle factory now in Arizona. So that's great talent that's going to deploy more electric vehicle manufacturing capability, which I think it's great news. Lucid Motors, of course, if you guys don't remember, kind of spun out of Tesla. It was started by a former Tesla board member who was also a Tesla executive at the time, or at least at the end of his tenure. He left to create Ativia. He did that at a time that Tesla was sort of dabbling. At Tesla, he was the lead of Tesla's powertrain program that we're doing for other automakers, like the Smart EV, the RAV4 EV, and eventually with Daimler, they did the Mercedes B-Class Electric. So he was doing things like that, and he wanted Tesla to also do Tesla, what eventually became Tesla Energy. Some people don't remember this, but Tesla Energy actually started like in 2008, but Elon Musk killed it in 2010 or something, 2009, 2010, because he wanted people to focus on the Roadster, which was having issues, and he thought Tesla was just too spread out. They needed to focus on their core product, which they did, and then they brought back Tesla Energy back in 2015. Anyway. They started Ativia with a group of people that left from Tesla to do that. They didn't work out quite well. They did have a few contracts to do some powertrains for other companies, to do some energy storage, but it didn't pan out much. But eventually they hired... Oh, I forgot his name. Ralston, I think is his name. Let me... I don't want to give you the wrong name. I think it's Peter Ralston. The guy that used to be the chief engineer for the Model S program when it came out. All right, my iPad is being extremely slow. Do you have that name that I said under the...
I closed that window, but...
I got it. It just opened up. No, I lost it again. It's not in there.
I mean, Peter Ralston sounds familiar. It's
yeah.
I just can't remember if that was his job.
Oh, sorry about that, guy. Oh, again, Peter Rawlinson. I got it here. Peter Rawlinson, the former chief engineer of the Model S, they hired this guy and they shifted the company from being just a powertrain company to an actual full car company, and they changed the name to Lucid Motors, of course. They got a few investment. It went well. They developed the car. They released a few prototypes, and we actually checked out the prototype two years ago, and we were impressed by it. It looked cool. The specs were, they look at the right place for the price point, which was $60,000. So it was kind of a Model S competitor, but with a lower price point and more option, a wider range of option, with 240 miles up to 300 miles. So very competitive with the Model 3, Model S at the time, at least. They announced a 700 million electric vehicle factory in Arizona. That was in 2016. And they plan to start production in 2018. Of course, we are in 2019. It didn't happen. They had a lot of trouble raising that money. But late last year, they finally got a $1 billion investment from Saudi Arabia. Of course, it was also an investor in Tesla. And well, at least as last time we know, because they never filed it. Apparently, they got almost 5% of the company, but they didn't quite get 5%, which would have forced them to disclose their position. So we never know exactly their position, but apparently it's close to 5%, but they might have divested over the last year, especially since Tesla stock went way down. Might have been a reason why. Okay, so now they have the money to make that factory. Now they have Peter Oeschlinger to lead that factory and to set up the production capacity. So now the new target is 2020. So that's as soon as next year. Do I think they can build the whole factory and start production within next year? It sounds unlikely, but I think at least now that they have $1 billion in their pocket and they have manufacturing leadership, they have a good chance to actually do it in the next few years at least. My issue with it is that by that time that the Lucid Air comes to production, the spec that they already released might be a little bit outdated. They still look quite good, I'd say. Like, if they come out with that right now, I think they're going to find a market for it. But the Model S has evolved since. It will looks likely that it will keep evolve, especially by the end of this year. There's going to be a few other competitors on the market in 2022. So I feel like they need to update that a little bit or update the price point. Maybe we'll see. I'm still pretty excited about it. All right. The other executive that left, we just talked about Peter, but Jan Hoymecki. Why do those people all have such difficult names to pronounce? He was the head of Tesla in Europe. He left. We heard about it last week. We're just able to confirm it this week. So they all left around the same time. We contacted Tesla about it. They didn't want to comment on it. They didn't respond to an inquiry. We think they already have a replacement for it for him in Europe. Though we had only one source on that, so we couldn't confirm it completely, but we had two sources on him leaving, so he clearly left. So Tesla's a new head of finance, sales, and operation in Europe. His name is... Why is my iPad so slow? Seth, you're the owner of 95 Mac. You should have an answer here.
You need a new iPad.
It's like the new one that came out last year. Isn't that a new OS on iPad that's coming up?
Yeah, iPad OS 13 is going to be great, I'm sure.
Okay, I'm going to have to look on that. All right, so why we wait for me to confirm to you the next head of Tesla Europe? Well, not confirm, but what we think is. We also learned of Steve McManus, vice president of interior and exterior engineering at Tesla, so a very high up position, was confirmed to have left this week by Business Insider reported that.
You said Sasha Zand is
that? Sasha Zand
is the...
Yeah, the supply chain... okay, I have it too now here. Yeah. Sasha Zand, the vice president of globalized supply chain at Tesla. We heard that he wanted to move back to Europe. He was working at Tesla here in the U.S., but they offered him the position so that he could move back to Europe. And Jan Hoymecki is out. He is out.
Yeah, these names are like somebody just bashed the keyboard a couple times, it feels like.
Well, Steve McManus is, I can say that. Steve McManus, yes. Also a big position at Tesla. So three vice presidents in a week. One thing that I thought was interesting to note is that the three of them, out of all of Tesla's VP, they look like the three with the most traditional automaker experience. Like Steve McManus was 20 years experience at mainly British automaker like Bentley, Aston Martin, Jaguar, Land Rover. 20 years of experience there before joining Tesla in 2015. Of course, Peter Oeschlendinger spent 20 years at Audi before coming to Tesla. And same thing with Hartmeike, spent maybe not 20 years, but like 10 years at BMW or something like that. So they all have deep experience with traditional automakers. Maybe it just didn't... I want to say that it just didn't clash with Tesla's like startup kind of fast pace. It's not really... I wouldn't say Tesla's a startup, but it has very much a startup mentality. I think that's fair, right?
Yeah, and they did last a while. I mean, all these guys were there for a number of years. It wasn't like they came in and out.
Yeah, like if you're at Tesla for 3 years, you're a veteran at this point almost. So like those guys are all 3+ years, except for Yen. I think Yen Oshimaki was on the Tesla for a little while. But I want to say that like maybe they are not. Their management style clashed with Tesla's fast pace startup-like style, but at the same time, then Peter Oeschlinger ended up going at Lucid, which is way more of a startup than Tesla, so
right.
I don't know. Maybe they work at a slower pace, maybe they're more like a traditional automaker-like, I don't know. But if you look at Tesla's, the rest of the VPs, they're mostly like tech, coming from the tech world, or they are Tesla-grown, really. If you like, you look at Drew Baglino's Tesla-grown, and of course, like people like top executive level, like GB has no automobile experience. Elon, of course, no automobile experience. So, same thing for the new CFO now. Like, Jesus, I'm blanking. What is Tesla's longtime CFO?
Deepak.
Deepak Ahuja was an automotive guy. He came from Ford. He spent years at Ford. Now they replaced him with promotion from inside the company, who spent years at Tesla, but I think he came to Tesla from school, I think. So it's an interesting shift at Tesla, and lately we've seen people being promoted more from at Tesla from inside the company to a higher up position. So I think it's a new trend at Tesla there, instead of going with outside employees, though they could always use outside talent too, because people poach heavily from Tesla. I mean, Apple, especially with the Titan project, has been poaching heavily from Tesla.
Yeah, we had a story today. Rivian had a couple of Tesla employees, although it wasn't
not
quite
very
as
high up. Like,
no, and most of those employees were coming from like Faraday, which were just jumping ship, basically.
Yeah. Faraday had a tough time because Faraday had 1,000 employees at some point.
That's crazy. Employees.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Now back to some more fun news for Tesla. The Model 3 crash test result for the Euro NCAP, which is the new car assessment program in Europe. It's like the main safety test done on vehicles for the European market. Got a nice car for Tesla Model 3. The nice thing to say about it, they said that it basically set a new safety technology benchmark. They meant that especially for the safety assist system. So all the safety features powered by autopilot, the lane departure stuff, the collision, side collision avoidance stuff, that was very impressive to them. Tesla scored 94% on that. And on all the new batch, because they test vehicle in batches, they released like all the D3 Crossback, the Kia Creed, the Mercedes-Benz B-Class, and even the GLE, Mercedes-Benz GLE. And no one came close to Tesla on that front. The GLE was the closest one at 78% out of 100 versus 94. So still a long way to go to beat Tesla. But also Tesla did very well on the adult occupant protection, 96%. On the child occupant protection, 86%. The only place where Tesla didn't score as well, though not that many cars score very well on that front, is the vulnerable road user. So I guess vulnerable road users is that how
How it hits people?
Yeah, basically. That's what I don't know how to frame that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any good way to put it, but like I guess
vulnerable road users or pedestrians and
like
cyclists.
What does that mean? Like, do they flip over the top of the car, or like what would be a best case scenario?
Well, I do see automakers working on that if you hit a pedestrian like from the front, so that the hood would have some spring to it, so that if they hit the hood, then they bounce up. And they fall on the ground instead of bouncing on the windshield or something, or like ramming into the car, which would of course be more damaging to both the pedestrians and the car. Sorry, that's something to laugh at, but it's a weird way. Like, you have to not only engineer your product to protect the owner of the product inside the cabin, but people that those owner of the product might hit, which is of course you don't want to. But that's, I think, I mean, of course you should focus on that to a degree, but I think the active safety features are more important on that front, because that means that you're less likely to hit someone in the first place. So,
right.
I think that should be the main focus, really. Like, because if
you hit someone, damage your car, even.
Yeah, that too. But I mean, if you want to save lives, if you hit someone, no matter what's your vulnerable road user engineering, if you hit someone with a 3,000 plus pound vehicle at high speed, you're going to hurt them pretty bad. So the goal is not to hit them in the first place, and Safety Assist can help on that front. They released a bunch of videos that we posted on Electric about it, where you see both the crash test and some of those tests to detect the Safety Assist features. Pretty impressed. Like the mannequin that they have for those, like the pedestrian mannequin and the cyclist mannequin, it's very well made. Like, those guys know what they're doing in terms of safety tests. I was impressed. And they were impressed too. Matthew Havery, the director of Reshus at Tatchham Research, was the group that performs the test for the Euro NCAP, said that the Tesla Model 3 achieved one of the highest safety assist scores we have seen to date. Its collision avoidance assist system is first class, and its autonomous emergency braking and forward collision warning system showing a high level of performance. Very good news. They're also impressed, of course, by the structural engineering, safety engineering in the car. Avery said that Tesla has done a great job in playing the structural benefit of an electric vehicle to its advantage. Impact performance is enhanced by the absence of a mechanical engine and the car's low center of gravity. The Tesla Model 3 really benefit from its all-electric architectures.
Also, I don't know if you remember the Model 3 launch event. Where Elon showed the Model 3 getting hit from the side, like right on the door panel, and he compared that to like a Volvo. And
that was a great picture. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's interesting is, like, at 1:52 in the video, 1:52 in, they do that exact same test, and you get kind of the exact same result, where there's like almost no breakage into the cabin.
Yeah.
At all.
Impressive.
So, I mean, as a driver, if you get T-boned, like, this is easily the best car to be in. And
absolutely.
So.
Yeah, that can be a brutal accident, too.
Yep.
So, yeah, in terms of, I don't know how much the electric architecture have play into it. It's just more like reinforcing the B-pillar, I assume. But the battery pack itself, I mean, it's great to have a low center of gravity for like rollover and stuff like that. But it's also great if you use the battery pack as a structural strengthening feature in the car, where your entire bottom is connected and it's their energy can be transferred through that. So that can be an advantage. Of course, he's also talking about the lack of an engine in the front, which increased the crumple zone in the front, which is great for frontal impact. So, yeah, those are all things that people don't talk about as much as an advantage for electric vehicles, but it can literally save lives. So, more electric vehicles on the road, if they are well engineered to be safe and taking advantage of those EV benefits, then it's great. All right, last thing we're going to keep you on is that we just posted that a few hours ago, actually. There's going to be an update coming to the Tesla app for owners of Tesla solar roof and solar panels system, where they're basically going to give more access to the data for those people. You will be able to view your solar production for any historical day, month, or year, and you'll be able to export that data I don't know what format, but you're going to be able to export it to use it in other things. So you can maybe build yourself your own Excel sheet and export the data in and determine some specific things about the time of use of your system versus the grids and things like that. I think it's going to be great because I think a lot of owners, when they start producing their own energy the first time, that they move away from the grid and they start powering their house, their home with their own energy, I think they can get like very obsessed with the data and like, oh, I'm not a slave to the electric utility anymore. So you get into it a lot. And I think also a lot of Tesla owners and or Tesla solar owners are techies, and they would probably develop their own tools to look into the data and everything. So I think that could be we could see some third parties, apps and things coming out of this. I think. What do you think?
Yeah. So a couple things. I'm not sure. I think they're reading the data from the Powerwall, like what's coming into the Powerwall through the solar. I don't think they're. I mean, Tesla has its own inverter, but I think they also still use like SolarEdge inverters as well. So I'm not sure exactly where the data is coming from. I think it's the Powerwall, but
they say both solar customers and solar battery customers. So I think it's going to be it can be for both of them.
Okay, so you know the data is great, especially if you have an API for it. What is also kind of good, or you know, we saw in Vermont where people are using the Powerwall for a meter, the electric company up there, Green Mountain Power, instead of having a meter on your house, they just use the data from the Powerwall. This kind of data is the same thing that you know other electric companies could use, whether it's coming through the Powerwall or the solar inverter. So it's a pretty powerful tool. Also, you know, one of the things I like about SolarEdge, which is an Israeli company that leads the inverter market, is that they have so much data that they can do crazy things with it. So, for instance, they know where the sun is hitting all over the world because they have geolocated points where they know how much solar energy is being produced, like literally all over the world. They're the biggest solar inverter by quite a bit. So, you know, they can predict weather. They know, like, you know, when the clouds are coming over and all kinds of stuff like that and stuff we're not even thinking about. So Tesla's also entering this market with more data. So
full disclosure, you know, I'm a SolarEdge investor.
Oh, yeah. So. I'm also a SolarEdge investor and a Tesla investor.
Yeah, that too. Well,
So, you know, I'm hyping this company that I'm invested in, but I did some research on it, so I know this stuff. I also have Teslas and SolarEdge in my house, so all three.
Yeah, we like those products. They're great. And it, especially, like, if you combine those, when you combine solar and you combine your EV, you know, I mean, it's a great thing just to be able to like think that, oh yeah, I'm literally driving on sunshine right now. I'm driving on solar power for the most part, actually. I mean, you're still connected to the grid in your case, but I assume that you're producing just as much as your energy.
Yeah, I mean, it varies month to month, but the grid is great because you have it as a backup. You have it as a way to offload your extra energy. And, you know, the connection fee is like $17 a month, so it's really not that expensive to have that as a backup and as a way to offload some energy.
Yeah. For me in Quebec, it still doesn't make any sense because the energy we have is pretty much renewable. Well, it is renewable, just in terms of its impact on the environment, it's still up in the air because, of course, like we have a lot of electrical dams that do have an impact on the environment because they literally like change rivers and stuff. But it's still renewable. It's still a limited impact on the environment in terms of carbon emissions. And it is damn cheap. So having a solar system doesn't make much sense. But I'm dabbling in it right now. I just purchased like a do-it-yourself system that I want to have a little project with. Yeah, that I want to see when I do. I can combine with batteries.
So, where'd you get it from? Like,
it's called Legion Solar.
Okay.
It was a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo or something like that. But it's a legit company that they've been delivering, so I wasn't too worried about it. So I should get that in a few weeks. And I'll see what just I guess I'm a little bit more concerned about in terms of safety and stuff like that. I don't want to do something that would blow up in my face or something like that. Not blow up, but like have an electrical problem. So, but I have a few ideas what to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, also check out wholesalesolar.com. They have a bunch of products kits.
The system that they're selling, like. It comes with a solar, so like one solar panel and one set of batteries or something.
That's
but
small.
But it's made to ramp up, so you can add to it something like that. So it's all the microinverters
microinverters
and things like that and solar optimizers and all the core wiring harness and everything you need to start your system, and then you can add your solar panels to it. It's a way to do it as simple as possible, like a plug and play type of system. And then I could go to Wholesale Solar, and if I say, all right, I want to turn that into a 3 or 4 kilowatt system, and then I buy all the panels I need, and I can buy also the batteries that I need. So we'll see. I'll report back on that. I think that's going to be an interesting project in a few weeks. But other than that, that's pretty much it for us this week. Still a good 40-minute podcast for just the first 2 days of the week. And again, we're going to be back with news later this week, just not a podcast because of our schedule. But all right, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I'm going to get back to you. Not same time, same place next week, but on Friday next week. Ciao.